Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. We are going to talk today about something that Shelley and I touched on last week in regard to people that squat on other people's property. We talked about the fact that years ago, it was an accepted an accepted situation if you moved into somebody else's land or on somebody else's land, and you could actually work the land, farm the land, and eventually own the land. So it's been around for a long time, and of course back in the Gold Rush days, there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on because that's how people got their land. It's how people owned their property, and that's how I'm sure, I couldn't find any information about this when I started researching, but I'm sure there's some people whose family have lived on land, worked land, especially farmland, cattle land, things like that, for hundreds of years that was gotten just exactly that way. So it has been a part of our heritage. Now, of course, if somebody else spends the money, the time, the effort to build a home on some land and owes a lot of money to a bank and something happens in their life, something makes a big change, and you can no longer stay in the home. You can't pay the bills. Say you lose your job, or there's the death of a spouse, or there's an illness that takes you away from the workplace. The home gets abandoned in a lot of cases. And when the home sits abandoned, sometimes it's months before a bank takes action for whatever reason. Sometimes, even if they do take action, it's on paper, not in person. They don't go to the land. They don't go to the home. They don't do any immediate work. Now, what I've seen around here in South Florida is you have some organizations some businesses, bank businesses, mortgage companies, etc., that are really on top of their game. And the minute somebody abandons a home, somebody goes and puts locks on the doors, tries to secure the property, keeps the lawn mowed, keeps things straightened up so it doesn't look like it is not being maintained. But in a lot more cases than that, the homes are just left. And I can tell you, I've been in many of them here in the acreage because doors are knocked down, windows are broken out. In many of them, all the appliances, air conditioning, water softening systems have all been stolen or removed by the previous owners. I don't know. Who knows? But what happens then is you have a shell of a house sitting someplace to be overridden by, of course, four-legged creatures and some two-legged creatures. So when we touched on it last week, and I have done a show in regard to squatting before, and I found out that the statistics were very high, and here in Florida, I think it was last year, we had a big story about a young man who actually squatted in a mansion. I honestly don't remember whether it was Miami. I think it was in Miami. And they had a terrible time getting him out of it because he had been in it. He'd cleaned it up. He was living in it like he owned it. It had utilities on, etc. So he got away with it for a long time. And when I started researching, I found information that tells me there's been many people through the years here in South Florida, in particular here in Florida. I don't know what the difference is, maybe because of the weather and what have you, and because of all the transient people that we have here. It happens a lot here, a lot. And some of them live for as long as, I read one story, as long as 3 years before anybody even realized they weren't supposed to be in this house. Now, how can that happen? I mean, it just kind of like blows me away. But, of course, we've talked a lot about the electric company. We've talked a lot about our legal arena. We've talked about our medical arena. Let's face it, a lot of stuff gets lost by the wayside, no matter what kind of business you're talking about, because the people that are sitting at the top are only as good as the people that are working at the bottom. There's no other way to explain why some things happen the way they do, and nobody's aware of it. I'm going to bring Shell in, but then I'm going to read an article that I've posted on my Facebook page, by the way, if any of you would like to read along. I think it sums up a lot of what's going on out there, and I found it very interesting. And to be honest with you, it makes sense to me. I know I don't have that right nor the authority to say that it's a good thing, nor do I have the I don't think I really have the chutzpah to tell you, go ahead and do it. But I would much rather see somebody utilizing and maintaining a property somebody's put a lot of heart and soul into than letting it just be ruined. Now, squatters that go in just to abuse and kind of massacrate a building, which I've seen a lot of, that's different. I think nobody should be able to get away with that. But if you need a roof over your head and you move into a house that you've watched and it's set there for so long, you know, with nobody taking care of it, and you see that people are starting to get into it, and you see there's a broken window, and you step in, part of that, even though it's not fair that you don't pay for anything, that makes my heart feel better than to think it's going to sit there and just rot away after somebody put so much into having it. So, good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey. You know, that's an interesting point, and again, you know, neither one of us are advocating illegal activities or telling people that, you know, that they should do that, obviously. But I'm kind of on the same page with you. There was recently a situation that I had mentioned to you where I knew people that were in a house battle over an estate case, and the people who thought they were willed the house were actually being sued by the actual heirs of the property because the quick claim deed wasn't done properly. So here the house sat while the two different sides of this probate case were battling each other. It sat dormant for almost a year and a half. The people that thought that they inherited the house stopped taking care of it, which was still doesn't make sense to me, but they stopped taking care of it. And then squatters moved into the house, and these are the squatters that the legal term is being used for now. These people went in, they were doing drugs in the house, they punched holes in the wall. The next time, one of the next-door neighbors saw what was going on and called the family, and when they finally got a court order to, because they're not permitted to go on the property, well, this court case is going on, they actually had to go to court, commission the judge to go in and look at the house, and when they got in there, it was just decimated. Holes punched in the walls, people had urinated in corners of rooms and ruined the carpet, windows had been punched out. It was just horrific. And there was just garbage, food garbage everywhere. So obviously these people were bringing in McDonald's and stuff like that and then just leaving the garbage there on the floor. So that's the type of squatters that actually will do even more damage to the house. But when you're talking about the, I wish, like I said, we've got to find a different name for them, maybe living squatters or home squatters. I don't know what you want to call them, but the ones that actually move in and start using the building, regardless of the fact that it's an illegal activity, are actually maintaining the value of the property for the homeowners. So, again, it is illegal, but the bottom line is it's actually a better scenario for the homeowner, because somebody's in there keeping the electric going, keeping all the utilities functioning, and it's beneficial for a home to be active when it sits, just like a car. If it sits, it starts deteriorating and quite substantially.
Well, for me, a squatter has never met somebody, meant to me. I never visualized somebody just going in and vandalizing. For me, that's usually they don't stay any length of time, people who do that. It's usually very sadly, because they always get the brunt of a lot of shit. It's the young kids. They go in and they party in there. They do drugs, like you just said. They eat in there. They do other things in there, a little bit more illicit. And just have it as a place where they can go where there's no supervision. I'm talking about somebody who actually doesn't have a place to live, and they see a dwelling that has running water in a lot of cases. Even some of these places I've been in that have been vandalized have still got electricity on. I can't even imagine who pays for the electricity. Probably nobody.
Yeah, I know.
And in some cases, they're still running water because if the electricity's on and it's got a well, the water's still on.
Right.
City Water, by the way, is another one of those companies that we'll have to talk about one day, because City Water is, in my opinion, and I stand alone in this, I'm not going to ask anybody to agree with me, one of the most poorly run organizations we have in South Florida, because it's just, I mean, I can tell of my own knowledge at least a dozen situations where water bills have gone unpaid for months on end until they're up in the thousands, and then they shut off the water and tell the people, you know, we're not turning it back on. Nobody can move into a property where the water has been turned off without honoring the water bill. I know of these scenarios firsthand. I know this is true. I know that this is what happens, and this to me is like unbelievable. Florida Power and Light, many issues with them as well. I think I shared with everybody that they sent me a bill for, like, it was close to $1,500 that they wanted me to pay, or they were going to turn off my power where I live now. And it was from something from 2007. I hadn't lived in that place since 2009, and I haven't lived there since 2007. So,
right.
I had a police report with all the information, where I went, who I talked to, the whole nine yards, and then send copies to FP&L. And I had to go up the corporate ladder to speak to somebody who could actually take that bill, because they turned my power off. And,
wow.
And
remember
my bill was up to date here. I mean, it's automatically taken out of my account. And I found that to be unbelievable. And when I first found out about it, I kept trying to reach the person that they told me I had to reach, and he never returned my phone calls. So there's a lot of, it looks like a lot of inability to follow through in a lot of these big companies. Maybe they've bitten off more than they can chew. Maybe they don't have enough help. I don't know what.
Yeah, but think about it. When I moved into my new house, I just called FPL and said, turn the electricity on at blah, 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 and they turn the electricity on. If it's off and you're telling them to turn it on, they assume you have a right to live there. So if somebody's moving into a house where the electricity is off, it's actually easier for them to take the property on, because the utilities are just going to assume, unless there is a big balance, of course. But if the person just left and they paid up all their bills, that's like a really easy situation to move into, because there's no questioning. And then once you have that utility bill, you can get everything else turned on. That's your proof of residence.
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you go to do something and they say, well, you have to have a utility bill as proof of residence? Once you've got that electric turned on, then you're good. You can get everything else taken care of.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something funny. You go to get a driver's license today and put a new address on it, you have to have, first you have to have two kinds of ID to get your driver's license. And in some cases, the old driver's license isn't good enough. You have to have a birth certificate. You have to have a Social Security card, a marriage license, a passport, two of these kind of things, two different sources. And then
right.
To put the address that you want on it, you have to show proof that that's where you live. So what if you're the kind of person who's doing things the way they're supposed to do them and you're moving in, you moved in yesterday from out of town and you know that you're supposed to have a new driver's license right away. I think you're given 30 days to change your address or something. You go in, you cannot change your driver's license yet. They want you to, but they won't let you.
Well,
so,
well, that's why they give you the 30 days, because you need proof. You have to walk in with proof. And so you need to establish some things to prove that. I don't know if a lease or if mortgage paperwork would prove. I think they want to see that utility bill, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's what they do want to see. That's what they do want to see. But I'll tell you something. I was able to go in this week, pay the taxes on a house that is not in my name, with a certified check that's from my account with all of my information behind it, and pay on a house that is not, legally speaking, mine. So when I said to the young woman, I said, do you need to see my driver's license? And she goes, no. She said, it's pretty unusual that somebody comes in to pay taxes for somebody else. I said, oh, okay. So she starts looking everything up, and I see this look of surprise on her face, and I said, since we just had that conversation, are you kind of shocked to see somebody else's name on the paperwork for this home? She goes, yeah. I said, do you want to see my driver's license now? And she said, no.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, and then something else that is just as simple, just as cut and dried, but they're going to want to see all these different, because that's the way they got it set up.
Yeah.
It's amusing. So I want to read or just kind of peruse this. I found this great story, and I put it on my Facebook, and it's called Squatting in Foreclosed Homes on the Rise. And it talks to a law that is called adverse possession laws in some states, which in rare cases allows a person to claim title to an abandoned property after occupying it for an extended time. Sherry Fields and her husband Owen Fields apparently thought they could live at a vacant home in Lakeland, Florida, for free. On March 27th, the couple moved into a foreclosed home valued at $160,000, changed the home locks, turned on the electricity, and brought in furniture. Besides having the cable guy come out and the meter guy come out and the water guy come out and to turn everything on, it looked like normal people moving in. Lakeland resident and neighbor Darren Pratt told ABC Action News in Tampa the only home on Echo Lane still belonged to a woman in California who confirmed that it had been foreclosed on. Despite filing for adverse possession, the squatters were soon kicked out and charged with burglary of a residence, grand theft, and scheming to defraud, according to the news channel in Orlando. I knew a little bit about adverse possession just from doing some research, the Homeowners Association president Danny Rodriguez told the Tampa TV station. Rodriguez had alerted the case to the authorities. You need to be in the home for 7 years. I knew they weren't here for 7 years. Florida's law of adverse possession dates back over a century to allow someone who cared for an unclaimed or an abandoned piece of farmland for 7 years or more to own it. But lately it's been used as an excuse for squatting in foreclosed homes. And according to Tampa's ABC station, those incidents appear to be on the rise. In Boca Raton, a 23-year-old Andre Barbosa claimed adverse possession in defending his 7-month residency. This is the story, and it was Boca, not Miami, in a $2.5 million luxury home in Millionaire's Enclave. The foreclosed home rightfully belonged to Bank of America, but that didn't stop Barbosa from living in the home, which he dubbed Templo de Camisamar, for free and throwing parties there for his friends. there's a picture of it online. It's right on the Intercoastal, you know, very elaborate. Similarly, I can never say that word.
Similarly.
It won't come out. The L won't get in there for me. Anyway, same thing in Texas. How about that? 51-year-old cited that state's adverse possession law as allowing him to live in a $340,000 Dallas area home. While residing there for 8 months, Robinson claimed to have kept the two-story, 3,200 square foot home fully maintained, keeping the front lawn mowed and house clean, and even claiming to have bought rights to the home at a Denton County courthouse for just $16. In both Barbosa's and Robinson's case, neighbors alerted authorities, and the men were eventually evicted. It doesn't end there, either. Entire communities have been taken over by squatters who claim they're acting under rights of adverse possession. In Tarrant County, Texas, squatters have been claiming and looting vacant homes in Fort Worth and nearby suburbs, properties with a total value exceeding $8 million. The properties that have been left by owners who recently died or by owners absent because of job duties or illness appear to be most at risk of squatters, and some property owners have returned home to find their houses trashed or looted. It's not healthy for anybody, for the neighborhood, for the county. Fort Worth residents Joe Bruner, who lived next door to a home that had been occupied by squatters, told the Associated Press, "You don't come in and steal somebody's home." According to Miami-Dade property appraiser Carlos Lopez Cantera, the abuse of adverse possession is turning into a nightmare for homeowners and law enforcement. In Miami-Dade County alone, adverse possession claims rose from 30 in 2011 to 70 in 2012.
Wow.
In 3 months of 2013, a whopping 52 applications were filed. It's a new frontier in fraudulent activity. Now, all of the stories that they mention in the end of this article, but they all touched on it, so this was the shortest and the most kind of inclusive. But they're not really talking about somebody. If the house is being really maintained and taken care of and cared for and repaired, and it belongs to a bank that's not paying attention because the people moved out, not because they're in France doing a job and they locked up their home and think it's safe. First of all, I don't believe, or let me say this, it's hard for me to believe in this day and age that somebody who can afford to do a job in France or in another country or leave an extended amount of time has some bucks. I mean, isn't that the assumption that we would all make? So the fact that they don't have a security system or something that's hooked up on a mansion in particular seems rather far-fetched to me. So I don't believe that these homes that they're talking about have, I don't believe, they don't give a percentage either, that a lot of them are homes that belong to somebody and they come home and find somebody in their house. I do believe that can happen. But I don't believe,
that does happen, but I believe that that's the exception to the rule, and it's not the it's not really what this article is talking about. But I've heard of that people go away on vacation. You know, some people travel out of the country for 2 or 3 months a year, and they live here for 9 months, and they live abroad for 3 months. I actually know a couple people that do that. But when they come back, they expect to find their house and property intact. Most of them live in gated communities, but not all of them do. And their house would be accessible to somebody that could figure out how to break in. And if they had an alarm system and somehow the person figured out how to bypass it, they'd have free rein. Like you said, I think most of them would have alarm systems. But what of the people that don't? I mean, not everybody that's well off does live in a house with an alarm system. I mean, so here you have a house. They might lock it down, put up the storm shutters to protect it. I've seen houses with storm shutters up for a couple of months, so you can tell the people aren't here anymore. But it's not in a gated community. It's not a mansion. but it's a house that you can tell is going to be unoccupied for a while because the people probably don't live down here. There's a lot of people that live up north that maintain houses in Florida for when it gets cold up north, and they'll come down here for a couple of months. So they're only occupying the home here, and then it's free. In fact, my sister's ex-sister-in-law did that. She owned a home in Florida. She only occupied it 3 months out of the year. She lived up in New York for the other 9 months. So her house sat for 9 months a year, and she put her storm shutters over. Now, this wasn't a mansion. There was no alarm system on there. There would have been nothing to prevent squatters from going in and living in her home because she didn't have anything that would have alerted her except for the fact that family members living in Florida had keys to her house and would periodically go and take a look at it. But it wasn't like every day. Weeks would go by, and then somebody would go over there and take a look at the house. So in any given moment, somebody easily could have moved in and taken possession of that house and started living there. But it wasn't It wasn't actually abandoned, but it looked like it was abandoned. You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't – I mean, Florida is renowned for seasonal dwellers. I mean, it's renowned for that. Snowbirds come and go. I don't believe that the kind of houses that people, and I could be wrong, but my husband and I have driven around and we've really, really assessed this problem. At one point in time, a couple years ago, when I first retired, I went around and I started a business. And I put letters in mailboxes and on doorways saying that my organization would keep this property cleaned up. And if I could, and then I wrote letters to the banks. I called banks. Nobody wanted to talk to me. Nobody wanted to do anything to preserve these homes. And all of them, except for maybe out of the dozens we looked at, were owned by a bank. Or the bank, took possession of it because somebody just, up and left because they couldn't pay their mortgage anymore. So I'm not talking so much about homes that are, where the shutters are down. Look on the beach some night. Drive along the beach in April and May, in the evening especially, and look up at the high-rises. I mean, probably 70% of a high-rise building, not as prevalent as it used to be. A lot of people just stay here all the time now, but there still are a lot of snowbirds. And if you look at those properties, they got shutters up to protect them against the ocean. There's no furniture on their little patios. Everything is cleaned up and put away. And it's the same with some of the homes. When we lived in Pompano and in Deerfield, in residential areas, there were people who bought homes way back in the 50s for like $14,000, and they still owned them, and they still lived in Manhattan in the summer, and they or by the shore in upstate areas, Cape Cod and places like that. So those kind of homes, I'm sure they get broken into, don't get me wrong. I'm sure that they get vandalized. I'm sure that things happen to homes that somebody looks for a long time and realizes that nobody's in there and thinks there's going to be valuable things. And I'm just talking about a family that can't find any place to live, and it's pouring down rain here in Florida. This time of year, it's like can be either gorgeous or like monsoons, and as we get into June, the beginning of hurricane season, you know there's a house sitting empty, and you and your two kids and your husband are living in your car, why not go into one of those houses? And why not be safe and sound? Is it better for them to go to a government shelter and let the government pay for their peanut butter and jelly sandwiches? It's just there's not a balance there for me. I don't right. want anybody doing anything wrong. You see, now somebody sent me a link to a company that is building these little tiny houses. They're very similar to a modular home. They come in pieces. You set them up. They're one room, but in it is like an efficiency apartment, a little kitchenette, a bathroom and a shower stall, and a living space. And they're building them for next to nothing. And there's a company that is putting them out there in the hopes of helping with our homelessness. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I thought to myself, what a wonderful idea, but where are you going to put them? Because land is expensive too, and then you got to pay land taxes, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. Everything that we see has entrails of all kinds of side effects. So, but I loved the idea. They're adorable. I can see somebody being able to live very comfortably, especially somebody who's on a pension or on a some kind of disability or something like that, and it wouldn't be a lot for them to maintain. So the idea is a great one. But how are they going to bring it to fruition? How are they going to do that? Are they going to buy a big lot of land?
By dawn, that's what they're doing. My niece lives in Loxahatchee, and some of the residents out there are up in arms because they took an entire tract of land out there, and they're building low-income housing. But what's going to happen is when they're done, it's going to make the property values of everybody that lives around there plummet. So the property owners out there are actually, you know, fighting this right now, trying to not allow it to be done, but it's already in progress. And a lot of the property owners are very upset about that. So Dawn was telling me that she's been seeing a lot in the papers about it, and, you know, some of her neighbors have been talking about it. But they're putting up this whole low-income housing community right in the heart of where they're all living. So it's actually happening right now. So maybe that's what you were hearing about.
Well, no, these are they haven't figured out where they want to put these. These are little tiny. I mean, I can't even. They look like little dollhouses, Shel.
Is it like the old Levitt homes when Levittown was originally built? Every house was the same, and it was these. It was kind of like, I mean, they weren't modular homes at that time, but that's what it was. They were little box homes. Everybody's house was the same, and then as people lived there, they would they would put additions on them. So 20 years later, every house looked different, but they all started the same. These little tiny cute little box homes.
Well, these are like I said, they look real cute. They look like they could have little planters out front and be somebody's dollhouse in their backyard. That's how little they are. And,
oh, wow.
And then
did it have
they,
any room or you didn't see any floor plan?
It's just one room. It's just
One
room partitioned off with a bathroom, you know, like a little tiny bathroom, like you'd put in a travel,
It would be like one person.
Well, two people could live in it. I don't see why not. The one that they showed had a big bed in it, and that went into, or you know, a.
Well, it wouldn't be really suitable for a family with kids. I mean,
it would be very difficult unless it was just a baby or something.
Right.
But it would certainly keep the first people I thought of course, is our homeless vets. Families, and now they're all by themselves. And a lot of those people right now are being housed by the VA hospitals. And that's another arena that gets help, but it's just not enough.
Well, you know, it seems to me like this whole situation with squatters is a lot like bullying. You know how when you say bullying, it's overbroad and it's used to describe situations that actually aren't bullying, that are actually criminal activity. This is something that Izzy brought to our attention. It looks like the term squatter has now become overbroad because it's used for people that are homeless and drug addicts, and not all homeless people are, but I'm saying for that element, you know, for people that are looking for a place to go and get high and be vandals and just go in and trash a place. It's used for people that maybe lost their home but are business people and just want a nice place to live. Like you said, that one guy went in, turned the electric on, took care of the property, you know. It's for people that are trying to basically take another person's property because it's abandoned. And I have issues with that because if it's an actual foreclosure where the house is sitting abandoned for 6 months, a year, 2 years, and you and I both see houses like that all the time, and then somebody goes in and turns the electric on and gets it cleaned up, regardless of the fact that it's illegal, at least they're doing something positive. They're bettering their situation, and they're actually protecting the value of that house, regardless of whether or not it's illegal. But when you have somebody go into an abandoned house because maybe the owner is, like you said, in the hospital or something happened, and it's still owned by somebody but abandoned for a reason that that person can't control, and then somebody goes in and hostily tries to take over possession of their house, that, to me, is criminal. And that's unethical, and that shouldn't be happening, you know. So there's some shades of gray here where you have several different types of scenarios all being called squatting. And they're, from my perspective, they're very different from each other. The only one that has any level of, well, you know what, it's still illegal, but it's not actually immoral, is the one where somebody is going into a truly abandoned house. It's not owned by a private individual anymore. They're not harming somebody, spent their whole life paying this house off, and now something happened to them and they're just away from the home, but it's still their home, okay? If it's a truly abandoned home and they go in there and they get everything running again and they just reside in there until they get caught, that's different because they're not trying to steal it from anybody. They're just utilizing something that's sitting dormant. That's the only scenario to me that from a moral implication is actually okay, and it's actually better for the bank because they're preserving the quality of the house. You know, so that's the one that really is kind of okay, you know. But all the other scenarios to me are not, and they are criminal, and I don't think anybody has the right to go in and hostily try to take over the property of somebody else because they can't be there for some amount of time. I think that's highly unethical, and I'm glad it's illegal.
Well, of course, I would never be an advocate of something that's taking something away from somebody that believes it's still theirs and have every intention of utilizing it. It's not about that. I'm talking about abandoned homes, homes that have sat empty. You see that they're being vandalized on a regular basis, and you're homeless. And you walk in the back door one night and you realize that the water runs and you clean it up and pick up the broken glass, put a piece of wood over the window that's been smashed in, and you start out by sleeping in sleeping bags in it. And as you get your job in the neighborhood or in the vicinity of this house and you pay to have the electricity turned on and things like that, and you maintain this house and keep it safe from the vandalism, that's what I think should be looked at. Not
right.
Anything where somebody takes something from somebody else. For me, like I said, squatters originated, the term squatter originated way back in the gold rush days when everybody went to California and they could work land for a certain amount of time and it became theirs. And that's, for me, that's what the word means. When we're talking about somebody who moves into your house and just abuses it and steals stuff from it, that's called vandalism and that's called theft and that's called illegal, activity, period. I don't mean that. And I think that the other scenario where somebody comes in and uses it as a home, they keep it safe from the other side of this coin.
Right.
Because now they're there. Nobody's going to come in and smoke crack in their living room because now they're in their living room.
Right. Well, you know, one of the issues is, you know, and it's a frustration for me too. You know, you say all the time, you know, it's a sin that the banks allow these houses to sit out there unoccupied. Why isn't something being done to, you know, let people go in there? You know, so here we have all these abandoned houses and we have all these homeless people. you know, and everybody's like, well, why isn't somebody doing something to put those two together and, you know, and solve two issues at once? But the problem is, and you see this all the time on these court shows I watch, is that if you have somebody, sometimes people are homeless, and I don't believe it's the majority of them, but it is some of them. Sometimes people are homeless because they make really bad choices in life. You know, they get themselves fired from their jobs because of drug abuse or they get into too much criminal activity, and they're actually that element of society, and that's one of the reasons why they're homeless, because they can't do an honest day's work. How is somebody that's, you know, you're a bank holding a house, how are you now going to put a tenant in there, all right, that you're going to allow to go in there because they're homeless, and you don't know if they're an honest person that just got laid off, you know, or if they're one of these type of people that deserve to not be working, because the one person will go in and take care of the property, the other person will go in there and gut the house and take everything of value and remove the plumbing. And, I mean, a couple of the shows I've watched, these tenants, after they moved out, they took everything with them. They took all the appliances. The one tenant actually went in and cut out all the copper piping so he could sell it. It was the most astonishing thing. The judge was like in shock because they had a way of tracking this guy down, and he came up with some harebrained excuse of why this was okay for him to do that, because he was pissed off at the landlord over something, you know. But I guess one of the reasons the banks don't do it is, how are they going to know that the person they're putting in there is not going to start piecemealing the house out to get money, especially if they're in a situation where they don't have money? So that's probably one of the reasons why they don't do that. As far as I'm concerned, there should be a solution to this. I think it would cost the banks less money to, like, each bank have an inspector that has to go maybe every 2 weeks or once a month to just say hi to any tenants they put in there, make sure that the house is not being trashed, you know. And I think it would be less costly to keep the electric on and to keep track of people they put in the house than to allow a $300,000 house to deteriorate to losing two-thirds of its value over a couple of years. You're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, and to maintain it on an annual basis would probably be less than 10. So to me, I'm kind of like you. There should be a way of working this out and creating jobs for people at the same time and maintaining all these property values. I think the community should be behind this, because think about it. If you've got abandoned houses all around you, doesn't that reduce your property value? I think the community should get behind something like this.
It also increases your rate of no protection. You can't know who's in a place like that. But let me tell you something. Real estate is one of our richest businesses in the United States. I don't know about other countries. I've never looked into it, but I'm assuming.
I'm sure it is everywhere.
It's probably the same everywhere. So, but there are hundreds, thousands of realtors. So every time a bank takes over a house or takes back a house due to non-payment, and they have real estate companies that work just for them, they send out a realtor. A realtor does, walkthrough, spec list, or whatever you want to call it, a punch list on a home, and says, okay, this is the way the people are gone, and all the appliances are gone. They probably sold them before they left. This happens a lot, a lot, a lot. My house didn't have any appliances in it. Nothing.
Yeah.
A microwave that they couldn't get out of the wall. But the dishwasher was gone, the refrigerator was gone, the oven was gone. And we've been through houses with realtors. The houses are for sale. And walked in with them, and the homes are just, I mean, there was one over here right off of Royal Palm Beach Boulevard that we fell in love with. They still wanted $160,000 for it. There was not one wall in one room that hadn't been smashed in. There was not 14 windows to be replaced.
Mm.
Screen enclosure was, you know, just totally ripped out. The swimming pool had furniture, garbage, everything just, you know, floating in a black swimming pool.
Wow.
It was the bathrooms, toilets had been smashed, and they still wanted to sell it, like I just said, for $160,000. All the pipes outside, there was no AC, it was gone, along with all of the pipes that that run insulation and stuff like that. It was yanked out of the top part of the breathe space in the attic that you could see. It was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So this is happening, and I don't know if anybody even knew it looked that bad until it came up on some kind of a real estate list for my realtor, and we went and looked at it, and he was like, I don't even know if they know this is what's happened to this house. And I said, how can that be? If they put one of those big doorknob locks on it, people just knock down the door.
Well, this is what surprises me, and I guess this is where you're coming from also. If a bank takes back a house, it seems like it's just paperwork. Nobody physically goes and looks at it or keeps an eye on it. It would be to the bank's benefit. I mean, how much does it cost? Like you said, you handed out your flyers. You know, I'll maintain it. If they're letting the grass grow, if they're not maintaining the outside, I mean, how much does it cost to have the lawn mowed? Okay, I don't care if they have 1,000 properties. All right, get somebody out there every other week, it doesn't even have to be weekly, or even once a month, just to keep the lawn mowed so it looks like somebody's still living there. Because when the lawn, I mean, that one property that you and I had both looked at the same property, the grass was like 3 feet high, for God's sake. It was like being out in the marshlands, you know. And then that's going to upset the community. It could have an effect on the value of the neighboring homes, because now it looks like it's a depressed neighborhood. So it has a lot of far-reaching negative effects. It has an effect on the neighbors of that house. Okay, if I have a beautifully manicured yard and then my next neighbor's house has got 3-foot grass and it's collecting all kinds of rodents and snakes, that's going to upset me, you know. And I think the banks have a responsibility to the communities where these houses are to at least upkeep the lawn, and that would sort of deter squatters, because they know that somebody's coming there every 2 weeks to take care of the lawn, and there better not be anybody living in that house. You know, there should be a way of doing this and monitoring it, and that small expense would at least help preserve the value of that house and not let it get so trashed between the elements and squatters. Those are the two things that just destroy property value: somebody going in and vandalizing it, and allowing the elements to get to it because of a broken window, it rains in the house, or because no electricity, and you allow that mold to rise up, which is so prevalent in Florida.
Well, like I said, there's always many sides to stories like this. And two different things, though, that I want to make very clear in my mind are: a squatter who comes in because they have no place to live and wants to maintain the home and take care of it is one thing. A home that has been literally abandoned, that went back to the bank, and maybe the people are only 2 mortgage payments behind. And the bank will start calling and try to reach them and everything, and if every time they try to reach them, they don't, then it just gets pushed back on somebody's desk. So say 6 months goes by, and they start proceedings to have these people, you know, thrown out of the house. And the bank is in, say the house is here in Florida, but the bank that bought this mortgage is in Minnesota. That happens a lot. So, or the mortgage company. Maybe it's not even a bank. Maybe it's just a mortgage company. And it's, you know, in Tennessee or something. Who knows? So nobody comes to look, And in the meantime, somebody else knows it was their friends, say. They knew that they left the house, and they got no place to live, and they move in, and they maintain it. They keep the power on. They pay the bill. They do all that stuff. For me, that kind of a squatter is advantageous for all of us. Somebody who's going to go in and know that the people that lived in that house took off in the middle of the night because they can't pay their mortgage, and they've never seen any big trucks pull up, and they've never seen anybody else come and look at the house or do anything, and everything is still opened except for a little bolt lock on the door. So somebody breaks in the door and vandalizes it. That should be illegal, and they should be prosecuted. That's a whole different story. But, like I said, while you've been talking, I brought up this other site that I looked at last night. If you dream of taking ownership of a vacant home by living in it, then legal reality sets in. And it is. In different states, it's a different amount of years, but it still exists on the books, is what I'm seeing. There is still this law that's called adverse possession, and it does establish some squatters' rights. But in some places, you have to live there for 15 years. And that means, you know, ducking and dodging, because somebody might show up and say, you know, is this really your house? Because eventually the paperwork will come in front of somebody who's going to pay attention. And so you have to be, you know, I can't imagine living that way, honestly, because I just feel like that would be incredibly stressful.
Yeah, but I'm on the same page with you there.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine.
Talk about
doing that
for a minute. You and I are in agreement that the only scenario that we find, although we have to keep saying it's illegal because we're not trying to talk anybody into doing this, but the only scenario that really is, from a moral standpoint, beneficial for people is if somebody goes into a truly abandoned house where they're not harming another private individual and make it their own, you know, upkeep it, turn the electric on, mow the lawn, you know, and to give themselves a place to live, you know, for whatever reason, because they landed on hard times and they need this break, all right, and they're actually keeping the value of the house up. In that particular case, but if somebody were to do something like that and get caught, what are the legal ramifications to that? What are the legal consequences? What could they be facing if they get caught, regardless of whether or not we think it's a decent thing to do? Let's say they're going in, they're not trying to do this, taking on the possession of the house. Say they're just doing it like that one guy who lived in the one house for 4 years. I don't think this is what he was trying to do. I think he found a house that was abandoned, and he moved in, and he wanted to live there. What type of legal consequences are they potentially subject to?
Well, it's all different in different states, but it can be, you know, I mean, you can get in a lot of trouble, obviously. I didn't find anything where the people were actually pulled out and arrested. I didn't find anything like that, but there's always fines that I see and different kinds of stuff like that. I'm going to keep looking today to see if there's anything different. But one of the really interesting things is this man who tried to do this. He calls himself a savvy investor, and he used adverse possession to take over a home in the Dallas area. And it cost him $16 in filing fees to go to the county clerk's office, and he got 8 rent-free months in a home valued at $340,000. The ploy gave him a hook to peddle an e-book explaining how other people could use adverse possession to squat in vacant homes and eventually claim legal title to those properties.
Wow.
The lawyers with this law say that he got the law all wrong. In February, the mortgage holder foreclosed. Robinson moved out rather than face eviction. Although Robinson failed, his actions bring up the question of whether it's possible to take a house via or by way of adverse possession. And
so you haven't actually found a story where somebody was successful with that in in modern time, because this is something that's going back a long time ago when the law was really being utilized. You haven't found somebody like in the last 10 years that's actually accomplished this?
Well, for a time, they've all accomplished it for a time. This, you know, several months, things like that. There's also an area, they show a picture of it online that looks like a sweet, like, I don't know, like a nice neighborhood where all the houses are like brownstones, like they are like in parts of New York City. But this is in Pennsylvania. Squatters in a vacant Harrisburg homes are growing concern. Harrisburg officials say the city's code enforcement department's six officers average 100 citations a year against irresponsible property owners. Now, see, again, these are places where they really don't take good care. But the fact of the matter is, if somebody is in a position and is taking good care of the home, then they may still be getting away with it, Shel. People may not even know that they're doing what they're doing if they're doing it right.
Right.
That makes sense. Right. If they are actually paying the bills, keeping the house looking nice, because this paperwork is so far behind in so many different cases, especially after what happened in the last few years. I mean, we're just starting to get a handle back on the cost of homes and stuff like that. There was a time here in South Florida when an acre of land.
Hey, sweetie, do you hear that interference in the background?
Yes, it's my...
I'm hearing like a conversation behind you.
It's just my computer talking.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, because it was kind of overshadowing what you were saying.
Because I have you on speakerphone. What I'm saying is that this everything I'm reading talks about people who didn't do things right. The idea, which seems to be in vogue among people who want to become squatters, is that they get some rights immediately. That's not so. A squatter is a trespasser until he or she has been there long enough to get the benefits of the adverse possession statutes. And that law is still in effect. But in some places, it's as long as 20 years before you can actually say it's yours now. But during that time...
What's the shortest term that you've seen so far?
The shortest time is 7 years.
Okay. So it's still... quite a lot of time. That means somebody could, like that one guy who got away with it for 4 years, he was only about halfway through. And again, I don't even know that he was trying to do this. I think he was just trying to live in the house. I don't know that he was going for adverse possession. But that's a long time, to fly under the radar. I would tend to think it would be kind of a nerve-wracking way to live. You know,
yeah.
But it could give somebody temporary relief, at least allow themselves to get situated and to, you know, to have their home base in order and be able to go after that better job because they've got, you know, I mean, there's so many sides of this issue, you know,
Well, and it's very, you know, each state, because each state writes their own laws in regard to stuff like this, it's always different no matter where you are. But the point is that it's at the end of the day, it doesn't make sense to have in one arena a whole bunch of homeless people, in another arena a whole bunch of empty houses that are being vandalized.
Right.
Those
right.
two things, there should be a meeting of the mind to say, oh, my God, look at this. We have all these empty houses that nobody can afford to pay for, and now nobody's taking care of them, so they're going right down the tubes, and we'll have to just push them over with a bulldozer. And over here, we're feeding all these people. It's costing us $100,000 a month to put in a soup kitchen over here and cots and sheets and people to work here. Explain that.
I know.
It's, you know, it's one of those, and I understand that it would be hard to put into motion. I understand that it would be difficult to manage, but it just makes sense to me when you have, you know, it's like having two pieces of a puzzle sitting beside each other and not seeing them so that you finish your puzzle.
Right.
You know,
the other
we're out of time. We're out of time.
I was just going to say we're out of time.
So I want to, if anybody's got any ideas on this, call us. Let's talk about this, because this is a major problem in the whole world, not just here in the United States, all over the whole world. So let's talk about it. Everybody go out there and have a great day. The sun is shining through my office window. I think it's going to be beautiful here today in Florida. And God bless everybody. Have a good one. Be back tomorrow. Thanks, Shell. Talk to you after a while, honey.
Yeah, thanks, Rainey. Bye-bye. Have a wonderful day, everyone.